And what can you do? Because that's the only thing we can change. We can change our own actions. We can change how we think. We can change how we show up. And when we do that, ironically, the external world often changes how it relates to us.
Hello and welcome to The Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Welcome to the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is fantastic. Her name is Suzanne Mattson. She is a globally recognized executive coach, trainer, and facilitator who specializes in transformational leadership for managers of complex projects. With nearly 30 years of experience, she has worked with leading organizations such as JP Morgan, Citigroup, Lego, Philips, and countless others. She's coached hundreds of individuals across the globe, and she excels at helping her clients rethink how they lead global teams, handle challenging situations, and deal with huge amounts of pressure. Her philosophy is centered on the belief that best results in leadership stem from self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and the desire to grow and give back. An award-winning author, Suzanne has written The Power of Project Leadership, now in its second edition, the Project Management Coaching Workbook, and she's here today to talk about her best-selling book, How to Do the Inner Work, praised by Tara Brach as brimming with inspiration and powerful tools. We love inspiration and powerful tools on The Daily Helping. Suzanne, welcome to the show. It is great to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. It is a great honor. Thank you for wanting to speak to me today. Yes.
Absolutely. So I can't wait to talk about the book, but I want to jump into the Suzanne time machine, as I love to do with people on this show. Talk to us about what put you on the journey you're on today.
Yeah, I guess we all have, many of us, and me included, had that pivotal moment where something just shifted. And I'll take you back about probably 18 years. Makes me sound really old. I know I've been in this game for, as you know, over 25 years. But I was a hardworking project manager in big corporations. I was working in investment banking. I was running change programs, and I actually really enjoyed it, even if it was very stressful. And I was invited by my employer to attend the leadership program. And during that 5-day residential program, I was coached for the first time. And actually what happened was that they paired us up and we were just, it wasn't even a professional coach. And we were asking each other questions. And I came to this coaching session with my colleague, a gold trader, saying to him, help, I'm exhausted. What shall I do? And he followed these coaching steps. And I am not joking when I say within the space of an hour, I had pretty much had a complete aha moment. It felt like something was shifting inside of my brain, whereby I felt completely empowered. And I realized, hold on, I've been looking for the answer outside of myself for how to stop my overwhelm or how I can go home at 5 p.m. instead of 7 or 8 p.m. And I realized that actually it's within me. It's within my own power to make a change. And I know it sounds very simple, and it, in a way, it is simple. But if you haven't thought about it before, if you haven't thought, hold on, if I change my mindset, I can change the way that I work and live. So that was really the central idea. And then what happened was I thought, this was a powerful coaching session. Something happened. I've never heard of coaching before. So actually, within 2 months, I was signed up to do a whole weekend program. And by the end of that weekend program, I had paid £5,000. And this is 15 years ago. Or 18 years ago.
Yeah, so with inflation, that's quite a bit of money.
It was in 2007 or 2008. It was the week that the Lehman Brothers went bust, 2008. And I thought, hold on, I've been brainwashed, but it feels really good. And so I embarked on this coaching journey. I began to coach my colleagues in the bank where I was working. And then after about 4 years, I thought, I've got to do this full time. So that's where this focus today on coaching and leadership is really combined.
And it's interesting because, you know, you went in a different direction. You wrote a couple of books about leadership, but then this book that we're going to talk about today, Do the Inner Work. What was the reason you decided to write that book? Because it's so different than your others.
You know, it's very true. I'm very well known for The Power of Project Leadership, which is in second edition, it's won an award. And then what is happening is that as I'm working with people, be they executives or be they senior project managers or, you know, from other walks of life, we always end up somewhere with something emotional. We always end up with needing to look inwards. People are overwhelmed. And we're not talking about strategy because I'm not in the business to give advice and give strategy. I'm in the business to help people reflect on themselves, reflect on what's really going on, reflect on what's perhaps a bit difficult, reflect on how they're relating to themselves and the world around them. So we always ended up in our coaching sessions or in our leadership programs going deeper. And my existing leadership books didn't really address that more basic layer of emotion and beliefs and sitting with myself and perhaps meditating, perhaps using the breath to help drop into myself and not just being on autopilot or doing what I've always done, or perhaps even overworking because I'm running away from some negative emotions. Because what happens if I stop working, then all these doubts and fears are going to come up. So that's really why I thought there was a need for more of a self-development book. It's a digestible book because I thought if people are overwhelmed and they need to do some inner work, I don't want to give them a thick Bible to read through.
It makes sense, right? And so this book came out in 2024. You probably started writing it in 2023. You know, so when you were creating this book, we were at a place where, you know, there's geopolitical conflict everywhere and people are divided and people are angry. And it's interesting because, you know, we have a generation of people who are now fully identifying that they have mental health issues, right? The Gen X, the boomers, less so to where they're willing to acknowledge that they have emotional distress, particularly the boomers, the Generation X more so, but Gen Z, millennials, they're much more apt to say, I have anxiety. Like they'll, yes, I have anxiety. The problem is those generations also tend to identify with more of an external locus of control. That is, you know, things happen to them, much like the weather, right? And so it's hard to address mental health issues, and it's hard to grow as a person if you're constantly anxious and if you believe that things are happening to you that are completely out of your control. So I love that you've written this book now because people need to do the inner work. We do need to be working on ourselves so that we can be happier and more successful and not gaslit by everything that's on TV and riled up about what's on social media. So take us through, Suzanne, the core tenets of this book.
Yeah, and I want to speak also to what you're saying about younger generations, because I do think you're right that younger generations now, they self-diagnose and they almost wear these labels as a badge of honor. But perhaps there is a little bit of what we might call spiritual bypassing, which means, yes, I may have put this label on myself, and in theory, I want to do the inner work, but I'm not really doing it because it's difficult and it's hard. And so, as you're saying, I externalize it or I compensate in some other way. Whereas when we do the inner work, we're doing the opposite of spiritual bypassing. We're sitting with that which is difficult to sit with. And sometimes we may need some external help. So this book that I've written is really taking the reader or the listener, because I also recorded the book, so it's available as an audiobook. It's taking the listener or the reader on a journey, a gentle journey where we start gently with, where are you? If people are genuinely feeling that they're drowning a little bit, that's uncomfortable. Or if they're feeling that, yes, I am above water, but I don't have the mental space to even think clearly, which I think is the case, unfortunately, for many people. Then the first part of the book is really about just acknowledging that and taking time for yourself and also using self-compassion. Don't now think that I should do this differently or I shouldn't be here, because that just becomes another stick that you can beat yourself up with. So I really try to hold people in this book and say, it's okay. Just begin to notice what is happening for you, begin to acknowledge what is happening. And then as we move on this journey of the book, we can go deeper. First, you need to begin to listen to yourself. You need to begin to create space to be with yourself. And you need a few self-help tips, perhaps, putting the oxygen mask on yourself first, because there's no need, or I think it's not right, to begin to do a lot of deeper work if you're feeling you're drowning, for instance. So we first, in the book, try to get people to, or attempt to get people to a place where they have self-compassion, where they have carved out some time for themselves, where they're beginning to do more of what gives them joy and meaning, so they can feel more energized. Once they're there, we can begin to ask some of the deeper questions. What are the deeper patterns that are going on? And how can you begin to address those? How can you begin to have maybe some difficult conversations, set boundaries, or maybe make external changes that will suit your inner landscape?
So I love this. This is like building a house, and you're talking about building a strong foundation before you start putting up the framing. So if somebody's listening to this and they're nodding along, they're saying, yeah, Suzanne, this sounds really good to me. I don't know how to, you know, discover, you know, things that make me happy. I don't know how to cultivate appreciation for myself or that self-compassion you spoke about. How do we do that?
Well, first of all, practically, there are about 24 exercises in this book. And some of them are about visualization. So close your eyes, imagine this. And in the audio version in particular, people can close their eyes literally and listen along. But even if people have the paperback, I've actually recorded those, just the exercises, so they're freely available on the website. So that is my job, is to guide people to that place where they get some insights by using what did you use to enjoy when you were younger? So that there's a lot of ways that we can get people to take a different perspective, because we have a tendency to go in circles in our own mind. So that's why it's really good to get somebody external, or a coach, or even a therapist, or a book to help us to begin to see things differently. So I would say all the exercises help us with that.
Okay. So we have worked on ourselves a little bit, getting kind of where this is priming, right? We're setting this foundation to where people can tap into their inner wisdom and be happy. Okay. So once we've done that, and once we've gotten to a place where we're willing, we've done these exercises and we're looking at ourselves from a different perspective than we had before, what do we do next, Suzanne?
Well, I would say there's a number of different things we can do. We can either go into what is not working. So am I ready to look at what is not working? Am I ready to be with something that is difficult in my life? And we can explore that. And or the book also says, well, what bigger changes do you really want to have happen in your life? Let's identify your innate values. And do you live those values today? So let's say somebody really values, could be freedom. This is a big value for a lot of people. Well, how does freedom express itself for you? Is it that you love to travel, or is there another way in which freedom is expressed in your life, or you would like it to be expressed? And then we need to begin to compare honestly with where you are today. This is actually traditional coaching. It's almost like, where are you and where would you like to go? And let's use your values as the way to help you navigate the direction in which you want to go. So that's more like a towards. In coaching, we talk about we can be away from focused, or we can be towards focused. So towards, I want this. I want a different life with more freedom. Away from could be, there's something I don't want anymore. I don't want the drama in my life anymore. There's something in my relationships, perhaps, or something at work that keeps coming up. Maybe it's a lack of self-esteem. Let's just name one of the biggest patterns that I see. Or I coach so many people who actually suffer from imposter, or at least they really doubt themselves a lot. So that is something which is uncomfortable to be with. And if I take time and I sit on my own to meditate, that's what comes up perhaps. And so beginning to understand, what is that about? Do you dare to just sit with the emotion and let yourself feel this horrible feeling of feeling like an imposter, which is not a nice feeling, but we need to be able to relate to it. So I have a whole chapter in the book dedicated to this emotion that's knocking on your door. Could be anger, could be fear, could be this feeling of imposter, not being good enough. And so what we normally do, we shut the door. We put a lid on. I don't want to feel that feeling. It's uncomfortable. we have a lot of distraction techniques, but there's a whole chapter in the book about how do you invite that feeling in gently? How do you begin to relate to it? How do you begin to be with it? And that is not easy, but it is fundamental for every single human being, I would say.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Now, there's a lot to unpack here, Susan, and I love what you're doing. I love that you're helping people identify those negative emotions and deal with them, not sweep them under the rug or lock them away in a closet, but actually to address them. But I want to go into this piece you talked about you mentioned values, but you also mentioned, you know, visualizing things, seeing success. Having done this work with people at the highest level, is this a chicken and the egg thing? Because, you know, for me, your core values drive who you are and then what you want to achieve. Is it possible to really understand, you know, where you want to go at a level that will make your soul very happy, make your heart sing, without really being in touch first with what your core values are in your experience?
So some people express it differently. I think perhaps the answer is both and, if you like. So because I can ask people, when are you the happiest? Tell me a time where you've been the happiest. And people can come up with something. It could be anything. I was playing with my kids, or I was on holiday, I was exploring new places, or I started a new job, or I'm doing research. Could be anything. I'm playing my instrument, or it could be anything that really lights people up. Every single person knows what really lights them up. And they can tell me even without being able to verbalize their values. But we can often backtrack it and say, so what is the value that's being expressed? And the other way I work with people is to talk about their needs. So for instance, some people have I have a high need for growth. My fundamental human need, I love growth. I love variety. Some people are really geared towards being connected with others, love and feeling belonging to others. So that's what expresses in their lives more. Some people is contribution. That's really a big important need for them, human need for them. So we can also look at it in that way. But I find we can go down either of these routes. I can ask them to explain to me situations that make them happy, or we can look at their values and their needs and kind of build it up from there. And they're not mutually exclusive.
So it's kind of like all roads lead to the same destination. It just depends which path we hop on to get there.
And people are different because people are wired differently. Some people are more, they love tangible things. So they think more in situations. Others are more theoretical, and they might connect better with identifying a set of values on a piece of paper. What I also find is that when I start coaching people, they really need to get things off their chest. So you talked about before about this external locus of control. So some people, they start by playing this victim card. It's very normal. This is wrong. That is wrong. They did that. And I have to let them vent, you know, and also a certain part of the book allows people to just express what is happening right now. And then at some point, we do need to turn that around and begin to look at what's your part of it and what can you do? Because that's the only thing we can change. We can change our own actions. We can change how we think. We can change how we show up. And when we do that, ironically, the external world often changes how it relates to us.
Absolutely. So I love this. So we've set this foundation. We've done some inner work. We're tapping into not only our core values, but identifying the things that really bring us joy and passion, things that make us happy and fulfilled. So then what? What's the next piece of this, Suzanne?
Well, I really like this idea of finding, this is a metaphor, because some people want to save the whole world. They want to end hunger, or the, which is a very worthwhile purpose. But some people have big things they want to do. So they really find out that's my value. I want to do that. But I really like this idea of finding a small piece of land, like a garden that we can tend to. Just start in your own garden. Because if we try to fix the whole world, that is a lot. And we probably can't fix the whole world. I'm pretty sure that one person can't fix the whole world. So I also guide people in the book to find out what's the first step. And I have something in the book called the passion circles. So you identify three passions that you love working with. And it could be professionally related. So one passion could be, I'll use myself as an example, because I made this big transition in my own life about 12, 13 years ago. So one passion was corporations and management and project management. That was still a very professional passion of mine. Another passion circle, and imagine this as a Venn diagram. Another passion circle was my newfound interest in coaching and personal development. And then the third circle was really more about spirituality and yoga. I had these broad categories. And so what I guide people to do is to look at what happens when these circles overlap. So what do you get in my case when you pair up corporations, some of the more harder management, you pair it up with coaching and you pair it up with yoga or stress management? Well, you get me coaching people in corporations about overwhelm, which is exactly what this book is about. So I guide people to do that exercise because perhaps they need to make external changes to the way that they work. Not necessarily, but that's, I think, where we're going with it. Many people feel very fulfilled if their passion becomes their full-time employment. And sometimes that's not necessary or possible, but in some cases it is.
It's interesting because what I really like about this passion circles concept, Suzanne, is you reframe the way that I think about this, because a lot of people, the circles are not overlapping, right? You have work over here, you've got family over here, and maybe you've got your personal interests, and they don't overlap. And, this isn't to say that everybody should read this book and then immediately walk into their job the next day and quit their job and start their own business. You can have a great job, but what you've showed us with these passion circles is you can find ways to integrate these other things that bring you joy and bring elements of that into these different areas and connect them over. And as you describe that as a Venn diagram, I love that, because a little slice of this here and a little slice of that here, and then there's this intersection point, this junction where that can all come together and just make your life so much better. So I love the way you approach that.
And I think oftentimes we make that mistake of thinking, I've got to change everything. So I was a very hardworking, stressed out manager in an investment bank. And I thought, what, shall I become a farmer? Shall I become a yoga teacher? It seemed so drastic. I didn't want to let go of that, the corporate world, but I also wanted to see myself in a different function. And so sometimes we can make these tweaks. And the passion circle exercise helps us identify what are these tweaks we can make. You don't have to change everything. Please don't, in fact, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. But sometimes if we are feeling overwhelmed and we're not where we want to be and we wear a little bit of that victim mindset, we can't really see the way forward. And we're thinking that everything is wrong, but it's not. There's probably more right than there is wrong.
And I know as we're moving through the book, you've got a couple chapters with actual techniques. One chapter is all about breath work. And then you've got another chapter after that about meditation. And I find that so interesting, because a lot of people would say breath work is part of meditation and they're kind of one and the same, but you've separated them. So talk to us about why, because that's really unique and interesting to me.
Well, I have done a lot of both. People might say, well, how is passion circles and my values even related to breathwork? Why do you put it in the same book? And for me, it's part of the same parcel. How can we really relate to ourselves and do the inner work if we can't access it physically? Because there is a somatic part to all of this. Even emotions actually sit in our bodies. So that's why breathwork is incredibly powerful, both in helping calm down our nervous system. Because if I'm overwhelmed, I'm probably not calm. So it helps us to regulate ourselves. And it can do so much. So many different breathwork techniques have different outcomes. And the reason why I have it separately is because with very, very simple techniques, we can actually change completely how we feel in ourselves. In moments of overwhelm, for instance, changing our breathing will change our entire physiology without even going into meditation. However, breathwork is also, I would say, one of the pillars of meditation. Certainly can be one of the bigger pillars of meditation. And meditation for me is much more than breathwork also. And again, there are so many different types of meditation depending on what we want to achieve. And I've created a chapter. This is not five volumes on meditation, which of course is a very rich and broad topic. So I have some of the meditations there, again, help the reader to visualize where they might want to go, or it helps the reader to further understand themselves. So I'm using meditation for a particular purpose as well. Whereas I would say the breath work is mostly about regulating our nervous system. But you know, when I did the research for this book, what blew me away was what we call coherent breathing. So coherent breath work is about taking 5 to 6 breaths per minute, not over 20 like most of us do, but slowing down our breathing pattern to a circular breath where we breathe in for about 5 seconds and breathe out for about 5 seconds. And if we do that, actually it regulates the brain and the heart. And we can measure it. And the HeartMath Institute have done a ton of research on this.
I was just going to mention them, actually. Some of the data on heart rate variability training as it relates to breath work is fascinating in terms of the physiological effects of this.
And it blew me away because I think previously, some people have looked to the yogis. Yes, they have these techniques, but it's not scientifically proven. However, these days, many of these techniques are now scientifically proven. And I love that I can throw some science in there to back up some of these techniques. They work.
Absolutely. I'm loving this, Suzanne. So the last chapter in your book is called Befriending Your Challenging Thoughts and Emotions, a provocative title. Take us home with this. Tell us how this part of the book works.
Yeah, and this is actually where I also borrowed. You mentioned Tara Brach before. She's written a lot about something called the RAIN method. It's part of a mindfulness practice, actually. I'm leaning on some of her research into this. So let's say that I have an emotion that comes knocking on my door that I'm very uncomfortable with. How do I relate to it? Well, we begin to invite it in. And everything begins with self-awareness. Can I notice that something is happening? Can I notice that I feel this negative, let's call it negative emotion. I'm doing this because, in fact, there are no negative emotions. It's just that we find some of them negative. But let's imagine I have an emotion such as imposter, not feeling good enough. I feel this dread in my body. How can I begin to relate to it? Well, can I find a moment when I make myself comfortable, I calm myself down using breath work, and then I say to this emotion, okay, I'm willing to listen to you. And there's a difference to me in being consumed with an emotion and noticing it. If I'm consumed with an emotion, then I become the anger. I show my anger to you, or I am in the web of not feeling that I'm good enough. I'm consumed by the emotion. To me, that's different than noticing the emotion and having a dialogue. I'm still me, but I can have a dialogue. What do you want? What are you trying to tell me? What is this imposter about? What are the images? What are the situations that want to come up, want to be processed? Can I be with them? Can I breathe into them? Breathwork is very important because I need to continue to regulate myself as I invite these emotions in. And then there's a long exercise in the book about this. One of them is, can you notice where in your body this emotion sits? If it's anger, often what I've noticed from the people I coach, it's something red and fiery in my throat or in my chest. If it's fear, it might be butterflies, something else further down in my abdomen. If I feel pressure, it could be that I feel this heavy weight on my shoulders. So we can also begin to dialogue with this emotion about where are you showing up in my body and what are you trying to do for me? Because it will have a message. There's a positive reason why it's here. It wants to protect you from something, probably. It's a protection mechanism. So it goes into psychology. And I've got to be honest with you, I had two psychologists psychotherapist who read the book and said that they were a little concerned because they felt I went so deep in the book that the reader would need a therapist instead of the book. And my response was, I do encourage people in the book to work with a therapist if they have a deep trauma to work on. Absolutely, work with a therapist. However, I also believe that reading a book can begin to lay that foundation for us. And maybe we realize by reading the book that actually I do need to work with a therapist on this.
Outstanding. The world needs this book that you've written, so I'm grateful that you wrote it. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question, and that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
Yeah, there's so much I could say, but actually in light of this conversation, I would say be kind to yourself. If we can be kind to ourselves, I believe it's much easier for us to also be kind to others.
Well said. The book is called How to Do the Inner Work. It is available everywhere. Suzanne, tell us where people can learn more about you online.
Yeah. So I have, mostly everything is under my name, Suzanne Madsen, with an S-S-U-S-A-N-N-E-M-A-D-S-E-N. That's on YouTube. It's also the URL for my website, suzannemadsen.com. Even, I don't dare to say this, but I even have a TikTok account.
Well, perfect. And we will have the links to everything Suzanne Madsen in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. So if you're in the gym, we got you covered. Suzanne, I've loved our conversation today. Thank you so much for joining us and talking to us about your book.
Thank you so much, Dr. Richard. It was a true joy speaking with you.
I appreciate that. And I also appreciate each and every one of you who took time out of your day to listen to this. If you're excited, if you are going to start figuring out your passion circles, give us a follow and a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.